My first guest this evening has a theory which has come out of left field. To be precise, it's come out of the left hemisphere of the human brain. You're probably aware of how our brains are split into two hemispheres, the more creative right, the more rational left. Well, supposedly that's a real generalisation. But Tony Wright doesn't think the left is more rational. In fact, he suspects quite the opposite, that the fears that plague humanity, all those negative thoughts most of us struggle with from time to time, are the result of a left hemisphere which is malfunctioning. I first spoke to Tony earlier this year when he set a record for going without sleep, all part of his research into how our brains work. I spoke to him again. He's not a neuroscientist, by the way, but he's got some interesting ideas. And I spoke to him a few days ago, began by asking him to explain what's wrong with the human mind.
Well, my proposal is that one side of our brain no longer develops to its full function. In fact, it's quite limited in its abilities, and yet paradoxically, it's slowly assumed control. So we're running on the side of the brain that just doesn't work very well, but it's oblivious to its own disability, I guess.
And that's the left hemisphere.
Yep.
Now, what is it? What evidence do you base that theory on?
Well, it's obviously a pretty radical proposal, and I've tried to draw evidence from a range of disciplines and traditions. But I'd say some of the most tangible evidence comes out of the sort of research on how the brain develops when we're developing in the uterus and the effects of hormones in particular. And there's increasing evidence that supports the idea that our own hormones, particularly testosterone, and it ends up being converted to other hormones, and it affects a developing brain. And it seems to inhibit or retard development of the left hemisphere. And as I say, that's not my research. That's just drawing bits from other places. So that's a pretty tangible piece of evidence.
Where did your interest in this whole subject, the idea of the left hemisphere being dysfunctional but yet actually dominating the way we think, where did that interest come from, Tony?
Well, it's going back a few years now. I was slowly and somewhat blindly sort of piecing together bits of a jigsaw, even before I was aware there was a jigsaw, if you like. I was interested in evolutionary conditions of, you know, where our distant ancestors evolved and the effects that the ecology might have had on our neural development. And that took me in down the road of how diet, our current diet and how our ancestral diet might have differed biochemically. And tying that in with some of these elements I mentioned before, whether that would have affected how the brain develops in the uterus, I guess that was my starting point. And quite a few things seemed to join together quite quickly, really. It looked as if there were chemicals in our ancestral diet that might influence how the hormones affect our brain development. So it was really simply, well, if they were there then and they're not there now, has it made a difference?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about that in a moment, because one of the interesting things about your book, Left in the Dark, is your thesis about the relationship between, or your idea about the relationship between diet and the development of the human brain over many thousands of years, even millions of years. But before I talk about that, I think one of the things that came through early in the book, and perhaps which pricked your thinking about whether we're not reaching our full potential and that one hemisphere might actually be more developed than the other, the right hemisphere, is your interest in people who are savants, those who are sort of limited in some ways but have these amazing abilities, the idiot savants, those who can memorize great scenes and paint them, or people who've got great musical skills.
Yes.
And your view would kind of interest in where that brilliance comes from.
Yes, well, you're absolutely right, and I was particularly interested in the savants simply because, as you point out, that there's often what we would normally term dysfunction in some areas hand-in-hand with one or several, you know, superlative abilities. And, again, looking at the orthodox evidence, there seems to be a really good correlation that one side of the brain often suffers some kind of damage, and it's basically always the left hemisphere. I've never come across any cases where you get these phenomenal abilities emerging when you've had right hemisphere damage. So that was a pretty powerful clue. I mean, the interest would extend to prodigies of any sort or anybody who has superlative abilities, but the mechanisms aren't understood or aren't so clear, whereas with the savants, there does seem to be at least this correlation with one side of the brain demonstrating these latent abilities and the other side of the brain perhaps working less than it does in most of us.
And maybe that this gave you the hint that perhaps, because of course your idea is that the left hemisphere is dysfunctional, but it actually dominates yep. how we think. But if the left hemisphere is taken out altogether, or pretty much altogether, then the right hemisphere is left to roam free and do those things that we regard as brilliant or exceptional, like somebody's ability to memorize vast tracks of a novel or a piece of music or do amazing calculations. Those are all right yep. hemisphere things.
That seems to be where the evidence is leading, and in the cases of savants, I'm certainly not suggesting it's a complete turnaround. It seems to be more degrees of where there's perhaps been more problems with the left hemisphere, and it's no longer able to have total control. So although it's still, I would suggest it's still mostly dominant, its ability to stay completely in control is somewhat limited. And some of these other abilities start to leak through, if you like, that are potentially there in everybody. But in the case of savants, the sort of mechanism that locks them out isn't as efficient. So these skills start to come through. And as I say, that does seem to be evidenced with some of the modern research.
You've just answered another question I was going to ask you, which was whether you think the sorts of things that savants can do are things that are within everybody's grasp in terms of the potential is there in the grey matter on the right-hand side of my head. If my left hemisphere wasn't able to kind of control or dumb my mind down.
Mm. Absolutely. That's part of what drives me, really. It's not so much about painting a rather bleak picture of where things are at. I think that's an initial and necessary step if there is a serious problem, as I suspect. But beyond that is the potential locked away in everybody, both in terms of skills and abilities and perhaps a somewhat different psychology, perhaps a more functional psychology. And yes, there are other people who've pondered these things. In fact, there's some quite relevant research going on, mostly in Australia at the moment, at the Centre for the Mind, a chap called Alan Snyder, and he's come to his conclusions in a different way, but he's looking basically to see whether these kind of savant-like abilities do exist in everybody, and his initial research is very promising. He's starting to get some tentative results that basically, if you as you put it, you take the left hemisphere partially out of the picture, sure enough, you start getting some of these enhanced abilities.
Okay, well, given then that there's this amazing potential that is there and has somehow been locked away from most of us, what has happened over the last 500,000 to a million years to have made this the case?
Great question. What I've proposed is that going back to the dates don't matter too much. I've used the sort of 200,000 years ago as a reference point. Simply because it seems to correlate roughly with the period when the human brain stopped its rapid expansion, and that could fit quite well. As I say, the dates aren't too important. But what I've proposed is that as this process is engaged, where the left hemisphere has been much more affected than the right, and it's slowly lost its function, it's slowly lost its abilities, it's created a sense of fear. It's become, as any of us might do if we lost some of our basic senses, say we lost us, or we're losing our sense of sight or hearing, the world becomes a more frightening place. And the fear is led to a kind of drive for control. It's basically taking control because it's frightened. And I think you see that, I presented a historical model, but you see a sort of snapshot of that in our sort of lifetime, where we go from a more balanced sense of self. You see this in children. There's much more imagination, much more living in a sort of pictorial world and less conceptual world, and that slowly changes as the the hormones kick in, and, you know, by the time we get to sort of 7, 8, 9, our ability to pick up languages like Savant starts to disappear, and we slowly enter what we consider to be a more normal state of mind. But the questions are, is that really normal?
The ego takes over.
Basically, yeah, it takes over because, in my opinion, because it gets more and more frightened, and fear and control often go hand in hand. And again, it's quite a you know, radical suggestion, but it's really saying that we're all by degrees affected by this, and some people more than others, and there's a very strong correlation with the depth of fear and the degree of, or the need to take control, basically.
You're listening to Nights on Radio New Zealand National. I'm talking to Tony Wright, who's done research into the relationship between the two hemispheres of the human brain. He has a theory that the left hemisphere is dysfunctional, but it's actually taken over our thinking, with not very good consequences for the potential of the human mind. Tony, you believe that diet, the diet of our ancestors, played a big role in this. In fact, a crucial role in this.
Yeah, very much. I mean, there are still many unanswered questions around the sort of evolution of the very large human brain. It's still hotly debated what was driving this, and there's been various theories put forward. And what I was looking at was the biochemistry of our distant ancestral home, the tropical forest, and rather than the large brain being honed by the need for intelligence or adaptive selection and survival, I've pondered whether it was simply an incidental product of the chemistry in our ancient diet, particularly the hormonal effects, which don't seem to have been looked at in any great degree, and their impact on our own hormones. And that's really where I think the whole thing was triggered. You had this, I call it a kind of feedback loop, where the dietary hormones were affecting our own hormones in such a way that allowed the brain to develop very rapidly.
What we were eating, we were eating lots of fresh fruit and vegetables and leaves and things like that.
Yeah, basically, this sort of classic forest primate diet is mostly fruit and leaves. There are a few other things that get woven in there, but mostly fruit and leaves. And I'm particularly interested in the chemicals that are abundant in fruit, the chemicals that give fruit its color, the sort of yellows and reds that make the fruit stand out and appealing to eat. And they just happen to have quite a significant hormonal effect. And any species, any animal that starts to eat a lot more fruit or starts to specialize in eating a lot more fruit is going to take a lot of these chemicals on board. And that's particularly poignant during fetal development. If you've got a lot of these chemicals flooding through your system, they will impact on how the brain develops. And I think that's a crucial piece of the jigsaw that may go some way to explaining why the human brain expanded so quickly in the last stages of our evolution.
In that Garden of Eden, when we were eating fruit and raw vegetables and things like that. But what happened when, in your theory, what happened when humans started to eat meat?
Right. Well, I'll wind back a little bit. I think it's less relevant that we started eating meat, although I think there is a factor there. I think it's more that we lost the lost this perpetual flood of chemicals in fruit for whatever reason. My suspicion is that there was some kind of ecological catastrophe where the tropical forests were temporarily lost, and if your neural development depends on the chemistry of the forest, then you're in trouble, basically. And I think humans had inadvertently acquired this very amazing piece of equipment that bestowed an awful lot of intelligence and the ability to survive. And the loss of that forest, I don't think was sufficient to wipe us out. We survived. We did whatever we needed to do, whether it be eating roots and tubers or hunting or whatever. And clearly we've survived, and clearly we can do those kind of things. But what I've suggested is we lost the biochemical formula for rapid brain expansion and function. And despite surviving, we've slowly lost the formula that gave us this amazing piece of equipment.
We weren't eating raw food anymore. Is it the cooking that got us into trouble?
I think it's come in stages. I think, as I say, the key thing, in my opinion, is the biochemistry of the fruit. Once we lost that, that was a big piece of the jigsaw. It sort of broke the loop, as it were. It took took the chemistry of the fruit out of the equation, and we effectively became targets of our own hormones. We had this really big, delicate neural system that had emerged because of an altered hormone environment, and one of the factors that had altered that was gone all of a sudden. So I think that's the key thing. Then adding to those problems were the choices that we may have had to make in terms of dietary choices, whether it be eating more meat that can raise our own steroid levels, our own hormone levels in a somewhat negative way, or cooking the food because it wasn't particularly edible without being cooked. I think that also exacerbated the problem, but I don't see those things as causing the problem. They sort of came in later and made a not great situation even worse. And I guess you can almost see that going to its extreme conclusion in the worst excesses of junk food and, you know, where we're at today.
But why did it damage the left hemisphere more than the right hemisphere?
That's a very good question. I can only offer a possible answer here, because the evidence coming out of these research facilities looking into cerebral dominance, the left-right side of the brain, strongly suggests that the left hemisphere is affected more than the right. The whys for that, my suspicion is that there was, going way, way back, there was always a what I call an asymmetrical response, a lateralized response to hormones. Maybe it was beneficial, maybe having some specialist function in one side slightly different to the other, maybe that was a benefit. If you go way back into our ancestral past, and what I suggested is when this new formula came along, it kind of ironed out these differences so that both sides were responding pretty much the same way, but that potential was always locked. It was kind of locked into the matrix or the code. And when we lost the dietary influence, these kind of genetic differences, if you like, re-emerged, and one side turned out to be more sensitive than the other to the impact of our own hormones. I don't know if that makes sense. It's quite a complicated thing to express in a short time.
Speaking to me from his home in Cornwall, that's Tony Wright. That's the first part of a two-part interview. I'll play the second part of it tomorrow night at around about 7:15.